Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
I think we're pretty close.
Yeah. That's the Stranger Things theme. There, we're going. It's good. We're good. Yep.
What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Command Zone podcast. You're watching / listening this hunk of garbage. My name is Jimmy Wong.
Hunk of garbage? How's it? It's Josh Lee Klein. What's a hunk of garbage? That song?
Yeah, that definitely our rendition of that song, not referring to the podcast.
So we may have recorded this weeks ago from when you're watching it because Jimmy went out of town.
Still in China.
So he's still in China.
I'm not and, probably at this point, right?
But that was supposed to be the Stranger Things theme song, and I'm so sad because I haven't watched it yet because it just came out this morning and we had to record all these podcasts.
It came out at midnight last night, yeah. And 100% people have already finished it.
And by now, when you're watching this, I 100% have finished it, and
yeah,
I hope I loved it.
I'm going to be 100% on that too. I want to love it,
yeah.
Right? We all want to love it.
Yeah. I'm going to try really hard to love it.
Yeah, me too.
So today we're going to be, we've got a topic here, and it's kind of, you know, there's things that we want to talk about or we want to say on the show sometimes, but because they're not quite large enough for an entire show, it can be hard to sort of fit them in, right? Like, it's easy to do a show about Mana Curve because that's going to take up an entire episode or maybe even more than one.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to do a show about, you know, politics or card draw or card advantage. But there's a lot of little bits of advice that can be, like, sort of hard to impart. So we thought that it'd be interesting to just sort of throw those all in. And they're not all related. Just little pieces of advice, little tips that, you know, we can sort of give to. I think this is going to probably appeal a little bit more to newer players, but I think there'll be some nuggets in there for experienced players as well.
Yep, and hopefully be a conversation starter, which is what we always hope our shows will be. But first, let's talk about the sponsors from the show, and we actually have a little testimonial tweet coming up here from Twitter.
Yeah, this is from Rathalos Soul.
Tasty.
On Twitter. It's to Jimmy and Josh. Josh and Jimmy talk a lot about how Card Kingdom ships inhumanly fast, but it's not all talk. A deck and sleeves in an hour? Unreal.
Which means he placed the order and within the hour got the notification that it had been shipped out the door.
Yeah, it didn't arrive at his house in the hour, but
yeah.
But that's how Card Kingdom rolls. Like, they get the order, there's no lollygagging. As soon as they can, they're putting in a box and shipping it out to you, and that's why the stuff gets to people super fast. I mean, we had somebody from, like, New Zealand tweeted us the other day that they had gotten their stuff in just a couple of days, and they were, like, flabbergasted by how fast, because, you know, you assume you're outside the country, it's going to take a long time, but Card Kingdom is just, that's how quick they are.
That's a good point, actually. CardKingdom.com/CommandZone, very good at a lot of international shipping. There are some restrictions, but I've had a lot of trouble shipping prizes out internationally before. I've had God knows how many packages returned because of addresses and all that. Card Kingdom figures it out, and they do a great job of doing it. So make sure you use our affiliate link, CardKingdom.com/CommandZone, the next time you buy some magic product. Hey.
And if you want to buy some other accessories, then you can use our other sponsor, which is Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro makes the Eclipse sleeves. We talk about the Gravity dice. They make play mats. They're all the theme stuff. By the time you're watching this, Iconic Masters is almost out, and you can get the Kokusho sleeves, deck boxes. They have the play mats for all the different
Praetors. Yeah.
Yeah, we know this because, well, I think in just a couple of days, from when you're watching this, Game Nights number 12 is going to come out featuring the Professor and Wedge from the Mana Source.
Wow.
We're playing Iconic Masters. We're playing a made-up format that we made up, which is sealed multiplayer.
Don't worry, though. It feels like a Commander game, so enjoy.
And also don't worry, because we recorded multiple episodes with those guys while they're in town, so
amazing.
There will be a Commander game on Game Nights with those two also sometime in the future.
Yeah, so keep your dislikes to yourself. Just kidding. The last way to support the show, patreon.com/CommandZone. Every single week, we shout out one lucky patron to be recognized and honored and thanked on the show. And this week, that person is
Victoria Chom.
Thank you.
Victoria, you rock.
All right, main topic. Let's go right into it so someone can post the time code. All right. Sorry, I'm just throwing all the shade right now. Here's the time code. You're listening for it. Post it in the comments. Get some upvotes.
Now, post it for us. Thank you. All right. So, random advice. Let's just start right into it.
Mm-hmm.
These are not necessarily related. The first one is you should consider what new cards and effects have recently been released when building or updating your deck. And by this, I mean you can look at mechanics or just sort of themes, and that can oftentimes inform what you need to be putting into your deck, because you can kind of judge what meta shifts are those are going to sort of be catalysts for, I guess.
Yeah, and also you can figure out whether or not you can even use a mechanic. For instance, energy came and went, and I think a lot of people did a big for commander. Yep. But let's say you had like a random proliferate deck. You know, that is a mechanic that can be very relevant to you, not necessarily the best mechanic in your deck, but it's something that to pay attention to.
So there's been two things recently that have really, when I've been tuning up my decks, I've considered. One is tribal, and the other is the legendary flip lands, and specifically the new Gaea's Cradle.
Yeah, why not?
So you know that Growing Rites of Itlamok, which flips into Cradle of Itlamok, that's going to just go in a ton of decks.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see a bunch of Gaea's Cradle type effects that you didn't otherwise see. So it's very possible that you want a little bit more targeted land destruction in your deck than you did before.
Yeah.
You know, because people in a lot of play groups can't afford a regular Gaea's Cradle.
Correct.
But a Growing Rites of Itlamok, they certainly can. And so where you didn't need a Strip Mine, a Wasteland, a Ghost Quarter, even like, you know, a Stone Rain or some kind of effect like that. Okay,
please don't play Stone Rain. No, play it, Josh.
But something like that may be a consideration or a necessity for your deck now where it wasn't before.
I have a big hand up for Star of Extinction, I think is what it's called.
Yep.
That card destroys a land and then just does a board wipe. A damage-based board wipe, but 20
and
damage.
And kills... Does it hit Planeswalkers, too?
Yeah, I think so. So it's a comet. It's coming down. It's knocking out all the dinos, that's for sure.
I want to look up the Planeswalker thing so that I don't get into trouble.
Yeah. I'll keep talking while you look it up.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure it does.
Vamp. Well, the other thing is tribal, right?
Yeah, like vampires.
So we've been seeing a ton of tribal stuff, not just from Ixalan, but also from the recent Commander product.
Yeah, I mean, you can tell that, at least I hope that the reason that it's all lined up together is that they wanted to give some more support to what is, I think, one of the most popular formats, or not formats, sorry, sort of ways to play Magic, which tribal is very popular, because I think amongst casual and even very indentured fans, they really like the idea of playing their favorite tribe. And especially when they're going to start spreading the love out towards dinosaurs and a bunch of other new tribes, you get crazy cards like that banner, Vanquisher's Banner, and then you have all of the new lands that, for instance, you saw them in the last game nights. Like, there's a ton of good stuff now. Pretty exciting.
This just in, Star of Extinction, 20 damage to each creature and each planeswalker.
That's right.
Whew, so we got that right.
If a comet hits a plane, no one can hide in plain sight.
Yeah.
Especially the planeswalkers. Well, I guess they could planeswalk out of there.
That's
but
true.
By doing so, they also just
they're
die.
They're off the battlefield.
Right? They're off the battlefield, yeah.
So, yeah. It's unclear whether they die or they just leave, but they're gone. They're not on your battlefield. Yeah. The other thing I would say about tribal is when considering effects to put in your deck, you know, there's a lot of tribal stuff out there right now in the world of Commander, so it might be a time when Coat of Arms is not a great card that you want to play.
Mm-hmm.
You might want to play something, you know, a different card that has a similar effect. The go-to is kind of Craterhoof Behemoth, but Triumph of the Horde. In different colors, maybe there's something else. But Coat of Arms is very likely to help your opponent.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be something that you take out. There's also cards like
Isn't
Extinction.
Mana Echoes affect everyone too?
Mana Echoes, I don't know, maybe?
Might just be you. Look, yeah. I don't have my card database in front of me, but there are a lot of universal effects, especially when it comes to tribal. And that's why, you know, actually, I would really recommend people go back and listen to that Jason Ault episode. In fact, listen to every Jason Ault episode we've ever done. The guy's a prophet. Everything he talks about pretty much comes true.
Whenever a creature comes into play, you may add one...
the Oracle?
Whenever a creature enters the battlefield, you may add an amount of colorless to you, but you only add it to your mana pool, equal to the number of creatures you control that share a creature type with it. So if you're playing goblins, somebody else plays a goblin, then you'd get mana.
Just random goblin mana.
Yeah, for each goblin you've got. But it doesn't help them.
No.
There's a card, Extinction, which you choose a creature type and destroy all creatures of that type.
Right.
That might be a card you now put in where you wouldn't before because you have a chance of just destroying one player and not hitting any of your stuff about being one-sided. And I think that card's close to playable because a lot of times you maybe just destroy two, you know, things.
Yeah. There's a new black board wipe, too, that you get to choose a tribe and destroy every other creature that doesn't share a type with
it. Yeah, Kindred
Discovery, I think.
Dominance.
No, Dominance, yeah.
The black one, yeah.
So definitely, yeah, pay attention to the board wipes that come out because stuff like In Garrick's Wake came out in M15, and every time that card is played, it's a beating because if your deck
it's only
your creatures stay alive, everyone else's creatures die. And we all know that those kinds of cards are very powerful. For instance, Cyclonic Rift.
Yeah,
that's cards like good. On that level that basically save your stuff and destroy everything else's. Vandal Blast. So cards like that, you always want to pay attention.
Yeah, so I would say that, like, we don't know what's coming up in Magic, but we've got Iconic Masters coming up. After Rivals that will be Rivals of Ixalan, which will probably still be Tribal.
And then another 25th anniversary
but,
celebration.
You know, a year ago, maybe, we might have been thinking about a lot of things that affect artifacts. So you might want to, because of Kaladesh.
Right.
And that was an artifact set. And that might have been a moment when the meta is shifting more towards artifacts. And maybe you want to put more Vandal Blasts in your deck now. And you want to...
Can I have multiple copies of Vandal Blast in my deck?
Yeah, that'd I have great. It in all. Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe a bad example because you've already got that in there. But I do sort well, of, yeah. as I've been tuning up my decks and thinking about things, that's something I've been thinking about, which is like, okay, I do the normal stuff. And then near the end, I sort of think, okay, but what is popular right now that I can sort of skew towards, you know, that I can think about and go like, oh, well, I'm likely to run into more tribal decks. How does that change my deck? And it's usually only a couple cards, but it's something that I think you can think about. And
this
keep
also
in mind.
Definitely helps budget builders, because if you're looking to play a powerful deck and they just release a lot of support for one thing, then you're going to be able to get those cards a lot more easily than if it was, for instance, a very, like, for instance, Planeswalker decks are just hard to make because you need stuff like Doubling Season.
They're
and
expensive.
Those cards are old and they're expensive.
And Planeswalkers are expensive.
But if you wanted to get into tribal right now, you could build all sorts of powerful tribal decks. Not to mention, I think people in general, when they start playing Commander, build a lot of decks around that period of time and then stop building them. So if you're someone that jumps in more sporadically, you're going to find a lot more wealth of diversity between your decks. And that's something that Game Nights has taught us, is that by having to build around a new set or around a new commander, it sort of challenges you to both play with the cards and the new sets that interact with it. And you find that, like, you can make a very powerful deck without having to go to build the Hermit Druids, you know, of the world.
Damn that Hermit Druid.
It's a good card.
It's a good card. All right. Second piece of random advice is from one of our friends on Twitter.
Sweet Bit. Hey, buddy.
Tweets at us a lot. Had an interesting statement. Said, if a card name begins with tempt with, don't be tempted.
It's a very good point, actually. Those cards were built to benefit the person that cast them the most.
And you need
especially
to.
Especially one of them that we'll talk about.
Yeah, and you need to sort of immediately start to politic with the other players and try and get them. You know, if you can say, like, listen, I won't take it if you don't take it.
Mm-hmm.
And so the person, because usually if the person only gets one thing with the tempt with cards, and the big one's tempt with discovery.
Yeah, because you can get any
land. Any land. Ugh. Yeah, so that is one where, you know, I think. We've been guilty of this too, where I'm getting a land, and as soon as one person does, the other people are like, well, I'm getting a land.
Yeah, the problem is that you only need one person that actually needs that land to get everyone else to jump on that train. For instance, if you're a mono black deck and someone plays Tempt with Discovery, if you say no to that, you're an insane person.
Yeah, true, because you only have to go get Cabal Coffers.
Cabal Coffers are Urborg, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have so many good hits.
Yeah.
Or if you're like, you don't have your colors, like, how are you going to say no to that?
My backup plan, if I can't get the... you know, the rest of the players to not be tempted, is to go get Strip Mine.
Yeah, or tell everyone to get Strip Mine.
Yeah.
And then just point it at the person.
Yeah, that's what you get. But at the very least, whatever they're getting, they probably have one that's sort of the best case scenario for them. And you can Strip Mine away that one thing to sort of stop whatever the quote-unquote combo is. You know, because you can't have two Cabal Coffers in your deck. They're only going to put one out, and Strip Mine takes care of the one. And then after that, it sort of doesn't matter what else they got, maybe, if that's what they're getting, you know.
Unless, yeah.
Of course, there's other awesome lands. But if Guy's Cradle, then you get rid of that, and blah, blah, blah.
Strip Mine's actually, I didn't really even think about that, but that's a very good choice for
it. Yeah, you could get Wasteland too, probably, because whatever they're going to get is not going to be a basic land, so they sort of do the same thing. This brings me to an interesting little piece of advice, and this one's from Sean Watson from Commanderin.
Hey, guys.
At GP Vegas, we were in the middle of a game, and this scenario came up. And so the question here is, if you're given the choice, do you take out Urborg or Cabal Coffers?
I agree with what Sean said.
Yeah. So Sean said that you should take out Urborg. I took out Cabal Coffers, which I think was wrong, and Sean sort of explained it to me, and I was like, you know what? You're right.
Let's explain the cards really fast.
Yeah.
Urborg, Term of Yawgmoth, is a legendary land that says all lands are swamps in addition to their other types. So this includes your opponents, right? So it's it's a universal effect. And then Cabal Coffers is a land that you pay 2 and tap it and add black to your mana pool for each swamp you control. So together, it gives you a lot of mana.
Yeah, if you have, say, 9 lands out, and one's Urborg and one's Cabal Coffers, Urborg makes all your nine land swamps. Doesn't matter what else they are, they're also swamps. So Cabal Coffers, you pay two and tap it, and that makes nine black mana.
Right. So for three mana, you make nine, and then you have another six lands. So you can make 15 mana.
Yeah. And that just goes up the more lands that you have. Mm-hmm. So my knee-jerk reaction was to get rid of Coffers because that feels like the thing that's making a ton of mana. The thing is, if you get rid of Urborg, it not only turns off the Cabal Coffers. I mean, it depends. If they're mono black, I think you got to get rid of Cabal Coffers. But if they're not, then like, let's say you have nine lands, but only four of them are swamps.
Yeah.
Then all of a sudden, Coffers is not very efficient because if you tap two and tap the Coffers, you're paying three mana to get four mana. You only get one.
It's better than not having that at all.
But it's not that bad for you. It's not like game breaking.
Yeah, you still get a little benefit. Yeah. Not to mention sometimes, and this happens more rarely than I think, Urborg helps other players out.
Well, I think if you leave the Urborg, get rid of the Coffers, Urborg's still a land that taps for mana. If you get rid of the Urborg and leave the Coffers, Coffers itself does nothing. It doesn't tap for mana without Urborg out.
Well, it still taps. So you have to just pay two and tap it.
That's only if you have more swamps than enough. You can't use it. You
know I would assume, though, that you're not playing Cabal Coffers unless you're in a two-color deck or a one-color deck.
But there's a lot of points in the game where Cabal Coffers doesn't actually net you mana. You have to be above seven mana.
Right.
If it's 50-50, you have to have at least four lands out of that color. So, yeah, Sean's point was get rid of Urborg because Cabal Coffers by itself is not that powerful without it, whereas Urborg's a little bit better.
Yeah.
You know, by itself than Coffers is. So,
both good points, though.
Yeah.
I could see it going either way. And again, depending on the board state, depending on the player and their deck and their general power level.
You kind of got to depend on the other players in the game.
If you know the person's trying to exsanguinate you out, I think you have an easier choice. You know, if you know that they're trying to use their mana to the max, and it's not like I'm going to play five things, I just want to play one big X spell, it might change my decision a little bit there.
I mean, it depends on how many swamps they have.
Yeah, true.
But I think most of the time, Urborg is the right choice. All right. Number four, speaking of choice, someone on Twitter, and I forget who this was, says, all things being equal, attack the player with black that has black as a primary color.
Jeez, we're just rallying against black in the color power right now, huh? Per Urborg's getting destroyed. And that's a good point, though.
Yeah, I hadn't really thought about this, but somebody said this on Twitter, and their reasoning was that black is the color most likely to use its life as a resource for like other stuff. Pay life to draw cards, mostly pay life to draw cards, but a lot of times black's effects sort of cost life. There's some cards that like put +1/+1 counters on stuff, but you got to pay some life, things like that.
There's only one from black, and it's a Memorchesa deck.
Yeah, but
you're right.
That's sort of how black works. It's like, you know, you got to pay a little bit of blood in addition to some mana, but you can do a lot of different things. And so that was this person's point was like, so if I'm deciding sort of who to attack and I have multiple choices, a lot of times I'm going to attack the player where black is sort of a heavy part of their deck because that's more likely to sort of crimp them on another resource that they need.
Right. And the key phrase here is all things being equal.
Yes.
But of course, things are never equal in Magic. I think
sometimes early on you got you got an early creature and you have a choice.
It's true though. Like if I'm playing my Marchesa deck and I'm already losing a ton of life to stuff, if people start attacking me too, it quickly hampers my ability to, when I look at my hand, all of a sudden, well, I can't attack anymore because I need to, even if I can get the Dethrone trigger, I can't leave myself open. I can't play that that enchantment that gives +1/+1 counters because it costs three life each time. So there's a lot of different reasons.
I can't activate
reasons.
It now. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, like a Vona deck, think about that. Like Vona's great, right? But it costs seven life. So you have to have enough life to be able to activate it. Otherwise, you can't even use it. Like once you're at like 14, can you even really tap her?
No.
So it's counting on having life available to it as a resource, and taking some of that away can be powerful.
Yeah. Or just all things being equal, attack the Aloro deck. How about that?
Random bit of advice number five is play board maintainers is what
maintainers.
They call them.
So containers, maintainers.
We're always advocating board wipes, right? We're talking about running four to five of them in every single deck. And I think to combat that, these are for decks that want to maintain their board position, specifically creatures most of the time.
Yeah.
There are now a lot of cards that kind of allow you to maintain your board. And you know, we've talked about some in the past. Gaddock Teague's a good one.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Because that just makes board wipes so that your opponents have a real hard time casting any board wipes. There's a few that get through it, but not that many.
Not just board wipes, just things in general.
Yeah.
You know?
It maintains your board. It's hard for them to do much.
Mm-hmm.
Just because so many spells get turned off because Gaddock Teague won't allow them to cast non-creatures that cost four or more.
Void
or X spells at all. Void Winter is a good one. Turns out for like half of their stuff. It's expensive though. It's hard to sort of hold that up. Or
yeah, it's true. I mean, but here's the thing. It every time it gets played, I've never been at a table where people go, ah, okay.
Yeah, everyone's like, oh, Void. Yeah. They can't play anything. Yeah.
Like, could you imagine, right? If let's say we're playing in an online game and everyone had little digital hands in front of them, and when you played Void Winter, you could see like cards and hands go gray.
Yeah.
It would be you half would play that cards. Game all. Yeah. You would play that card way more because you would just see everyone's hands go. You know, and turn off, and their commanders even, cards on the battlefield. There's a lot of things that card affects.
We should say Void Winter says that your opponents can't cast spells with even converted mana cost. So
yeah, and can't attack with or can't block with
can't
creatures.
Can't block with creatures with
ever, even, yeah. Even, it can't even, basically. Read the card. It's always confusing.
Odd things, not
basically what
things.
Happens, every time Void Winter is played, same pattern behavior, everyone goes, oh, wait, hold on, and everyone takes their turn reading it and equally gives their own grunts of disapproval based on how their hand or deck reacts to it. Or they go, I mean, it's, I guess it's okay.
It's your opponents can't block with creatures with even converted mana cost. That does come up sometimes. A new one I really have been impressed with, we've seen it in play a couple of times now, is Revel in Riches.
Revel in it.
And I don't think playing this card with the thought, I mean, it's fine to have it in there with, like, I'm going to play it, and then maybe the next turn I board wipe, and then I just happen to get 10 treasures and win.
Mm-hmm.
Revel in Riches has two effects. If you ever have 10 treasures at the beginning of your upkeep, you win. And anytime a creature an opponent control dies, you get a treasure. So there's a lot of times on board states where there's enough creatures that if somebody board wiped, it would give you 10 treasure and you would win. Well, think of what that does. If you want to maintain your board and you put out a Revel in Riches, well, now Supreme Verdict doesn't solve somebody's problem because it makes you, they're like, you got a ton of creatures, you're going to win.
Yeah.
But if I play Supreme Verdict, you're going to get a million treasure tokens,
and you're gonna win. Yeah.
So we've seen that be sort of a big stop sign in decks. I think Revel in Riches in black decks that are creature heavy is going to start to be sort of a staple-y type card.
Especially because black has many of the best board wipes in the game. It was an instant remove the last time I played it, right?
Yeah.
Like, you just had to get it out of there. Otherwise, it's just going to pose a huge threat and issue.
It's so much calculating you have to do, too. Okay, I want to do this thing, but if I do that, does that make Jimmy win?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's super scary.
I mean, you saw it happen when Christine played it on game nights as well, because it really does change the things a lot. You know, it's a very interesting card. And at the very least, you just get incidental value off of other people's creatures dying. So if you know you're in a very creature-heavy meta, even with board wipes that maybe only put you to 3 or 5 treasures or whatever, I think that card is still worth an inclusion in a lot of decks that want to either ramp or have an alternative win condition. And I normally hate cards, Josh, that say you win the game on them. But Revel in Riches is one that I will make an exception for.
I like it because I think you can play it without that being your entire game plan.
Yeah.
Your game plan is still your game plan, but what that's doing is stopping them from stopping your game plan, because by doing that, they make you win in a different way.
Yeah.
Here's another one I've started to play, and this is, again, somebody had suggested a while ago on Twitter. It's Jolrael, Empress of Beasts. This is a 5-mana 3/3 green creature. It's a legendary creature. It says you can tap 2 in a green and tap Jolrael, discard 2 cards, and then until end of turn, all lands target player controls are 3/3 creatures that are still lands.
Yeah.
So here's another what I would call board maintainer, because you can threaten if you board wipe, I'll turn all your lands into creatures and you'll lose all your lands.
That's a good point.
So as soon as Jolrael is active, you just can leave that amount of mana open, and you're basically going to just, anybody that board wipes, all your lands are going to be gone because they're going to be creatures.
Yeah.
And you're in green. And green is the color that really wants to fill the board with creatures and doesn't have a great way necessarily to protect them. So that can really
It has
help.
Like one-off spells to make them indestructible or whatever, but it's not where you want to be. I'd much rather hold up something like Jolrael, because that is brutal.
I mean, can you imagine you've got Supreme Verdict or Wrath of God or...
I mean, you can even use that as targeted, like, hey, X person is going off. Look, they really cannot be allowed to continue doing this. And so Jolrael, if someone does board wipe, you can team up with someone too. I've seen this happen a lot of times against archenemy players, not with this interaction specifically, but let's choke his resources. Let's make sure that they can't do X, Y, and Z. And Jolrael is another really interesting way to do that.
I think, though, that this is something people don't play enough and you don't see enough, which is people extend and they get in a good position and then they don't have that card that sort of locks that position in for them.
Yeah.
Makes it so that, like, I've gotten here and now I'm going to put something down that stops what would allow people to sort of, you know, knock me down, back down to the Stone Age or whatever.
That's why everyone should play Dictate of Erebos. That's another board maintainer in a different way where people just will not play creatures. They'll figure out other things to do, but if you're a creature-based strategy and you have ways to sack creatures, especially, again, in black, oof, tough life. Hope no one's playing Voltron.
All right. Now we're on to a totally different piece of advice because this is what this episode is about. It's not related to anything we've just talked about. But this is a sort of a mistake and, I don't know, just something I see constantly from newer players, not just to Commander, just to Magic in general. And there's exceptions to this rule, and there's going to be people that be like, you know, you don't always do that. And of course, you don't always do that. But when in doubt, use all of your mana. This is a really big one, and I think most sort of newer players or inexperienced players would improve quite a bit by just following this as a rule for a while.
Yeah.
Until you get sort of good enough to understand when not to. And
how to sandbag, another episode we've created.
Yeah, I think there definitely Commander sort of lends itself to, we call it sandbagging, that's like holding cards back that you could play but choosing not to play them, lends itself to that more than other formats. But at the same time, there's very often times where I'm watching sort of less experienced players play and, you know, they're just not playing all the cards that they can. They're not using all of their mana and it's really hurting them in the long run. So wasted mana is sort of a wasted opportunity. And by this, I mean when, like, you've got 7 mana available to you and you play a 5-drop and you just leave 2 mana and you can't use it. And then the next turn you do something similar in the next turn. And over the course of those 3 turns, you cost yourself 6 mana and you could be behind a significant portion, which is an entire card, which in, you know, 6 mana is an entire turn, kind of.
Yeah.
So there's 2 ways to sort of do this. One is to make sure you use all your mana. And by 2 ways, I mean, there's 2 choices you often have. You often have, like, I can play 1 big spell or 2 medium spells.
Mm-hmm.
When you're in that choice, I think you should, again, when you're newer, always play the 1 big spell. And here's the reason why. If you have a choice between a 5 CMC spell or a 2 and a 3 CMC spell, right? You have 5 mana.
Mm-hmm.
If you play the 2 and the 3 CMC spell, then you draw your next card for turn and it's a 2-drop. You can't mix that together.
With the 5.
You don't have the choices. If you play the 5 now, whatever you draw next turn, you can mix it with the 3-drop, the 2-drop, or what you drew and play it. And so having the versatility of 2 small spells in your hand gives you sort of more choices later. And again, listen, all this is like, there's a lot of exceptions, right? This one, there's more exceptions than most. But when all things are equal, when in doubt, when you don't know what's correct, err towards, I think, this play sequencing will help you a lot.
The biggest exception I can think of is usually just if it's like 2 mana rocks instead.
Yeah.
You know, but...
And we should talk about that. Your normal play pattern, and we've never said this on the show, and I think because we assume people know it, your normal play pattern in Commander is to ramp early into bigger stuff.
Yeah.
So you don't...
And refill.
Yeah, and I think most people know this, but just in case you've never really been subjected to that philosophy, you want to get your mana rocks early so that later you can cast multiple spells in a turn to catch up. So think of it like, if I get a mana rock out on turn 2... and turn 3 and turn 4, then on turn 5, 6, and 7, I'm actually casting twice as much stuff. So I not only catch up to what I would have had if I didn't play those mana rocks, I have more stuff out later. I'm more explosive. So, yeah.
Just
it's funny that we've never said that.
Yeah, I think we've talked about how important it is to ramp early so that you can do more in one turn. We haven't really talked about the idea of casting 3 to 4 spells in a turn usually means you're on your path to winning the game, though.
Yeah.
And I think...
And ramp gets you to the point where you can do that, because...
It's just hard to visualize, because it's like, well, I could cast like a bunch of 2-drops. How is that going to make me win the game? But it's more like, I'm going to do X and then do the thing that you say, which is like, have the protection to do it, or have this sort of the follow-through punch, right?
Yeah.
Like, just going up to someone and socking them isn't going to do much, but if you can land like a 3-hit combo, you have a much better chance of laying that person out. And I'm not advocating for violence. I'm talking about specifically.
You're talking about Street
spells.
Fighter
spells.
Combo.
Yeah, I'm talking about combos.
That's and like then, Tekken, actually.
And then there's the combo breakers, which are counter spells, Void Mage Hushers.
Yep. Gaddock
all
Teagues.
Gaddock Teagues. Yeah, maintainers.
Oh, I guess you got to flash them in for that to work.
Yes. Here's number 7, the quick tip that we have espoused on the show, and I have yet to truly follow, which is lower your mana curve.
Lower it.
Lower it.
Lower it.
Even though we just talked about playing ramp spells to play bigger spells, still lower it.
Yep.
And if not necessarily lowering it, take cards out of the upper spots and adding cards in the lower spots.
But that's lowering your mana curve. By lowering your mana curve, it's just
some people
overall.
Might think everything, yeah, shift it down, take your nine drops out. We're not saying that. Lower your mana curve so that more weight is on the lower end of
take
the
curve. Some of your nine drops out. Yeah. Because think of what we just said, talking about ramping into bigger stuff. We didn't say, I want to ramp into a 12 drop. No, mm-hmm. I want to ramp into three spells in a turn.
Yeah.
I want to combo. You know, I want to play a 4-drop, a 5-drop, and then a 2-drop that locks everything down. You know, so lower your mana curve. I guarantee that this will make your deck so much better. Lowering your mana curve is a huge thing. Just being able to do stuff earlier in the game and then later making up for the fact that your stuff costs less by doing two or three things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you built your deck right, the synergy of doing those two and three things are much better than a singular threat that could easily be removed or, you know, with single target removal, essentially.
Yeah, good point. Like, you don't play, like, a Blightsteel Colossus and then somebody paths it. That you just lost, you know, like, 11 mana to somebody that way. I'm not saying don't ever play Blightsteel, but you want to play it in the same turn that you play a Lightning Greaves.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to just play it and then cross your fingers.
And the way you play it is you want to be able to play, like, a Haste Enabler and an Elvish Piper and then Blightsteel. You know what I mean? Like, there are better ways, and the way to get to that is by having enough card draw in your deck so that you get there.
Yeah, exactly.
There's sort of the relying on, like, I just ramped a bunch, now I'm going to play my big thing and then hope it doesn't get countered or stopped. The feel bads you're going to get from that are going to be more consistent and just happen way more and make you feel worse as a whole. But it feels like I played three things, they got rid of one, but that my part of my engine is still alive. That's a better situation to be in.
Lower your curve. Okay, this is a good broad one. I've noticed that...
I don't want to talk about this
one. As tuning, I've been tuning my decks recently, and one of the things I noticed is that there's a real tendency, because you... New cards come out, and you're like, this card's perfect for this deck. And then you look at it, and you're looking through that deck, and you're like, well, what do I take out?
Everything is so good.
Everything's good.
I already tuned this. I did that process.
Yeah, but this card seems really good. And then a lot of times, what do we all do? We all do it. You're like, well I'm just going to take out one land.
Yeah.
And I'll put in the card. And now it's fine. It's fine. You over the tuning process over like a year, or maybe, you know, depending on how often you tune, you might have taken out two or three lands from your deck. And I noticed, I was like, man, all my decks are running pretty low on lands. So this piece of advice is play more lands.
A lot more.
Yeah.
Well, not a lot more.
I'd say two or three more than you're playing.
Right now, in most of my decks, I'm between 36 and 37 and maybe like 5 or 6 rocks. I'd say in general, it's like 2 to 3 rocks equal one land, depending on the size of the rock.
Mm-hmm.
I need to push it up all the time.
38 lands, I think, is fine. Definitely err on the side of too many lands rather than too few.
Yeah.
It's just a better place to be.
And honestly, if you're like, man, I really wish I could play that card, then just go back and take out the card that underperformed the last time you played and replace it with that one. Like, you can do those one for one subtractions, but don't do like, well, I want to play all the cards. Let me just take out this basic. I have 5 of them anyway, so why not?
It can be really tough to sort of understand how a lower land count is making you lose, because it's not always like your mana screwed.
Oh, it's not hard to see. Well, okay.
It's not always like
that. In my case, it's not mana screwed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It can be tough because missing your 7th land drop,
yeah,
missing your 9th land drop, that doesn't, it just doesn't raise the alarm. It doesn't show up on the radar. But that can be a reason why you're falling behind in games, is because not in the early game, you're not getting totally mana screwed. You're still playing things, but you trip a couple of times somewhere around turn 7 through 10, and now all of a sudden you're just a couple mana behind for a few turns, and that can be big. It's the same as wasting your mana, just that you didn't hit your land drop. So
there have been so many times now where I look at my hand and go 3, 5, 9, and then look at my lands and go 7.
Yeah.
Like, geez, if I hit land drops every single turn, or if I had a little more ramp to make sure I did it, then I'd be fine. But yeah, you want to play multiple spells, and having more lands is going to help you out there.
Or you just want to play Expropriate, but it costs 9.
Yeah, that's pretty cheap for what it does.
It's broken. Okay, this is a good one. Consider your opponent's perspective. And by that, there's a lot of things that this helps you with. But one of the main things I think, and I think that people don't do enough, is sort of become aware of how scary you are to them.
Mm-hmm.
And what your scary cards are to them. So something I try and do during the game is put myself into Jimmy's seat, or, you know, Ashlyn's seat, or Sprinkle's seat, and say, okay, well, I've got their board state. I don't know their hand, obviously, but you can still do this without knowing it. If I'm them right now, looking around the table, what worries me?
Yeah.
And specifically from Josh, what threat level do I have him at? Do I have him at the biggest threat that I've got to super be worried about? Do I have him, you know? And that will help you with how you play, because there's a lot of times where you're near the precipice and you could easily push yourself up to the top threat level. And those are times where you, you know, I'm sort of countermanding some of the earlier advice, but those are times where you might decide to hold back because it might not be worth it to become the biggest threat because you're not equipped to handle becoming the biggest threat at that moment.
Yeah. Like if you are just going to tap out for something and hope that the turn order gets back to you without things significantly being different by the time it gets back to you, then you're just putting yourself in a really bad position. That's why having a card like Glenalendra, or even like a Dictate with a Sack Outlet or whatever, or even just Counterspell, those kinds of protections will help you take the throne. If you watch Game of Thrones, you know that no one that's taking the throne is just willy-nilly sauntering up there and thinking it's going to be all gravy when they get there. There's a lot of adversity, especially.
There's a lot of setup, too.
Yeah, a lot of setup. And it's also so easy in a game where no one's trying to make enemies necessarily to be like, oh, that person's clearly winning. Let's all agree. And then the person that's clearly winning has a very bad argument to try and get out of that, too. So it's easy to gang up on the leader.
I also think it can help you with deciding which cards in your hand to play or not play. Like,
yeah.
You're like, if you know, you suddenly put yourself in another player's position and you're like, well, maybe I shouldn't play Aura Shards right now.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's going to be super scary to them. Whereas if I play this other thing, it's a creature, they got a Maze of Ith, they're not going to be worried. And so I can get that out there and it doesn't raise any hackles. Nobody goes, wait a minute, let's reassess how dangerous this person is. They go, it's a creature, right. I'm not that worried. So you and then you can play. It's not that you never play Aura Shards. You just play it at a time where you're already at sort of battling that person, or you can immediately follow it up and use it, stuff like that. So I think that looking from their perspective can really help you decide which cards to play, and sort of you can manage your own threat level a little bit.
Yeah,
and you're going to be wrong sometimes because they're not going to evaluate everything the same as you, again, because you don't know their hand. But it's better than not doing it at all.
One thing that I really like to do, and this is one of my political tricks, is. Let's say it's the Dragonlord Silumgar situation, right? Mm-hmm. Where if it attacks with other dragons, it's going to give minus X, which were each of the attacking dragons, and you have a bunch of 3/3s, and I have 3 dragons on the battlefield. I'll play Dragonlord Silumgar, and immediately, while they're processing it, turn and be like, don't worry, I'm not going to attack with 3, and then just keep playing. And this, by doing that small thing, the person that is the most worried about it all of a sudden goes, okay, well, I don't need a board wipe right now. I'll wait on it, because I still have some free attacks. And it's sort of the kind of like unknown, like sort of under the table, like, look, I'm not gonna wipe your board, don't come at me. And you kind of try and imply that, but you immediately try and find the person that you're gonna threaten the most and make friends with them, give them that little bit of a breathing room, even if you're gonna turn the tables on them at a later point.
Yeah, and knowing that you need to do that lets you sort of react to it before everyone has a chance to. So you're saying that before the other two players can get in and say, hey, that's gonna, you've already said, and now it's sort of too late. You got sort of the first word in, and they're like, well, yeah, he is. No, he just said he's not going to.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, so, but you can't make that play if you don't first consider, okay, well, how are the other players going to react, each other player going to react? Because otherwise you got to play it and then wait and see how they react and then try and talk about it. And
that's
it might
the
be too
worst,
late.
By the way, to be like, I'm going to play this and be, like meekly sitting there and looking around and being like, okay, you guys get to decide how everyone feels about this. You know, it's your card. You understand what the situation that you're bringing, that birthing this card into this world, you should be able to try and mitigate a little bit of that reaction at the very least. Even like I've seen so many times where like if someone is on my side and I know that like we're kind of allies, they'll play a card. They'll be like, wow, that's such a cool card. Wow, everyone marvel at how great that card is, not the negative sides of it. Just to like try and stem the flow of someone getting salty or someone like building up an anger towards that or that player.
All right, we've got one more tip. Again, this is something we should have said on a past episode, but we just never have, I don't think. You should basically be prioritizing survival above everything else. So we're not like the other formats where sometimes you want to advance your board position or whatever. There are many points in the game where you look and you go, well, if this happens, I die.
Yeah.
That means you need to just you need to just concentrate on getting yourself out of that situation. Not if this happens, I win. Just don't die, because Commander games are long. It's really a marathon. You win a lot of games just by being the one that didn't die.
Yeah.
You win games by taking the throne, as it were.
And being winner, yeah.
But there are a lot of games you just sort of back into the win by just like, I blunted this threat, I stopped that from coming at me, and before I knew it, those two went at each other, and I was just kind of the last person standing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's how you want to play three-player games, right? is just to put the shields up and hope that two people find some kind of feud, because picking off the last person standing is a lot easier than trying to take everyone else on.
Yep. And it works in four player too, because a lot of times two people fight, then you're sort of in a similar situation where, well, the it's you and the other person, but somebody's going to maybe jump in on that. And if it's not you, then, you know.
Yeah, that's what I also love in that situation, looking to the person that's not fighting, being like, ho, ho. Because it's a four-player game. There's a lot. It's not like a polite family dinner sometimes when everyone sits and makes sure everyone can be heard. There's a lot of crosstalk that happens. And in game nights, you don't see it as much because we try to not speak over each other. But it can be really chaotic if things are happening. Someone's like spending all their energy looking at the board state. This guy's just bored out of his gourd, looking on his phone. Perfect time to slip in there and start putting up your political walls and stuff.
Yeah. So I think that can be a tough thing when you're coming from the other formats. But one of the things to really remember is not dying. Make the play, especially in the mid to late game, where you're safe from being dead.
That's why.
Even if it's like, well, that's not going to win me the game. That's okay, because you need to remember the other players can win the game for you by basically eliminating each other or making it such a knockdown, drag-out fight that, like, I eliminated you, but I'm just so hurt by, you know, I'm just limping away from that battle that it just takes, like, one little, like, bing, and you're out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a flesh wound. Yeah, it's an interesting point. I think people like to prioritize winning, and it's something that I think we all fall into. I obviously fall into that trap too, where it's like, you know what? Ah, screw it. I'm just going to do this. Craig is one of those players, I think, that's like, oh, whatever. I'll have fun for a turn. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work, but I'm not going to be upset about it.
Yep.
But for me, and that's why you play Propaganda and Ghostly Prisons in a lot of your decks, which is just stopping 10 damage in the early game is going to make a huge difference in the late game.
Yep.
And there have been so many times where I look at the life counter totals and being at the on the lower half of it. That might be a good tip. Try to always be on the upper half of the life totals. If there is, for instance, a 30, a 35, a 20, and a 15, you don't want to be the 15 and the 20. You want to be above it. It's going to give you a lot more leverage. It's going to let you control the board more in a lot of different ways. And people that are threatened by you, for instance, like you played a flyer when I was at a low life total. I was like, I'm going to do whatever Josh asks me if he asks me right now.
Because I have to.
He doesn't know that. I mean, maybe he does, but if an offer comes my way, I'll maybe think about it. But I'm ultimately probably going to agree with whatever he's going to propose.
Yeah, because you have less flexibility because you just can't afford to be taking hits.
You're not going
to
be, it's like you're going to hit me with a 5-5. Oh gosh, that's like a quarter of my life total at this point.
All right. Those are our 10 bits of advice, random advice.
Random advice.
You know, it feels good to get some of those off our chest here, because there's been little pieces where it's like, I don't know in the course of normal discussion how we're going to throw this in there. But, you know, there's some stuff we've just never said that seems like we should have. Like, play your ramp first. Play your ramp early. That's what ramp is for.
Yeah.
So that later you can cast a lot of stuff or big stuff.
Play ramp. How
play
about that?
Ramp.
Not a bad idea.
To the listeners, what random bits of advice do you have? That you would like to share that maybe we can talk about on a future episode.
Yeah,
like
we drew
this.
A lot of these from Twitter, from conversations that we've had in real life. I would love to see people have these conversations in real life and then bring those tips to us as well.
Yeah.
Obviously, the comments section is below, and it's always a welcome place to post stuff like that. So please post that instead of angry things. I like positivity. It makes me happier to do my job. Just saying.
You know what makes me happy?
Oh, boy.
When people go to cardkingdom.com / command zone.
I thought you were going straight to the Masters of Modern. I was like, oh, no.
And they use our affiliate link, and they order their Magic cards because, hey, all you guys are going to order Magic cards anyway.
Yep.
You may as well order using the affiliate link, and it will keep alive content that you like this podcast and game nights.
Revel in Riches. It's a good card. Pick it up right now.
Foil right Revel now. In Riches. That's actually I think that card's going to get – it's going to be one of those cards that just – over the years, you're like, you know what I've been playing a lot? Revel in Riches. I've just been putting in a lot
of Or every time it comes out, it just does work.
Yeah.
Just does work. Our other sponsor for the show, of course, Ultra Pro. Ultra Pro International. They do awesome things, obviously. Playmats, you're looking at Ultra Pro product every time you go play Magic. And they do a great job with the new Eclipse sleeve. So make sure that when you guys go to cardkingdom.com/command zone, you buy some of that stuff. Okay, great.
Also, make sure you check out our sister podcast.
That's skipping over the end step?
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
I was skipping. I was skipping over because I don't have anything.
Nothing. You've got nothing. How about let's talk about your Sriracha obsession recently. How many shirts did you buy?
About 4 or 5.
Wow.
I went to the Sriracha factory. That
I didn't
was
even
cool.
know that exists?
Yeah. It turns out that it's like half an hour from my house.
Oh, my goodness.
So we just...
Match made in heaven.
My girlfriend, who clearly I was meant to be with forever, because she just one day said, hey, I got us a tour at the Sriracha Factory. I'm like, what? And she's like, yeah, we're going on Saturday. So we just went over and got a tour. The funny thing is, we walked in and there's, because they're processing like peppers.
Yeah.
And immediately we were with a group and they're all like, and I was like, and I could feel a little tickle in my throat, like, because it's just peppers in the air. But then after like 3 or 4 minutes, nobody's anything. Like, everybody gets used to it.
Wow.
It's pretty interesting.
I just would have started sweating immediately. Just been like,
I need a towel.
Excuse me. Can I get a sriracha themed towel?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, this is the last of Josh's sriracha shirt marathon.
Yeah, this is it.
You'll see some reruns in the future, though, I'm sure.
It's true. I only have so many shirts. I try and buy more shirts for the show.
I recycle shirts all the time, and I get to wear like VGHS shirts randomly too. I cheat a little bit.
I try to not have, you know, wear a shirt that I've already worn, but that's, I can't keep that up.
We've done this for 3 years. That is near impossible.
But we've only been on video for what, a year and a half now?
That's like still like 100 episodes.
It's only 52 weeks of the year, Jimmy.
Oh boy, I don't want to buy 52 shirts.
All right, what was, oh, that was,
you know what else is spicy?
You know what's spicy? Yeah, they do have some spicy brews. I'm talking, of course, about our sister podcast, The Masters of Modern. Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman talk about the modern format and all things competitive magic. You can find them on Twitter, at the MMcast, and right next to us on collected.company. Oh, that was not good. Oh,
you missed. You missed hard. By the way, that's my camera. Just, you know, just be careful, please. Thank you. Our editor for the show is Terry Robertson. He's actually in this room as we speak, filming us for some cool behind-the-scenes content, as always. I also apologize. This episode and the last one were a little bit shorter, but that's because I am in China still, somehow. But recording three in a row is the last time we did this, we got very negative and delusional by the end.
Yeah.
And that was a blast, actually.
Now we're just delusional. We're not negative.
We're definitely delusional.
The funny thing is, as soon as Jimmy lands, literally that day or the very next day, we're shooting another game nights.
Oh, yeah, the next day.
So
yeah.
Rest up, dude.
Yeah, I'm going to rest up. Dang it.
All of that. That whole time.
Anyway, make sure you check out the video versions of these podcasts at youtube.com/thecommandzonepodcast. It's a blast. And Jeffrey Palmer does the awesome
Living Card
animations. Yep. Yeah, you can find him online at twitter.com/livingcardsmtg. Congrats, Jeffrey. You are now working at Channel Fireball. That's very exciting for you. Oh, my God. How are we missing?
We're really bad.
We both play basketball, too, so this is beyond bad. If you don't know what we're doing on the audio version, we're crumpling up our show notes from all three of the episodes that we've had today.
This is how we have, how many episodes we recorded today. We have this many pages of outline.
Yeah, and actually, some of them even went bye-bye. We still have not hit the lens yet, by the way.
I can get this.
All right.
Not even close.
All right. We have one more try. I'll tear
you got that one.
No. I need the note on this
no,
one.
No, that's fine.
No, I actually wrote something on it for later.
Okay. I'm
keeping this one.
Okay, this is for real. Here we go. You or me?
You.
Okay.
Embarrassing.
Oh, no.
Got it. No. All right, well, you have to tie me now because we both have one more shot each.
Okay, wait. I'm gonna change my angle. Oh, it's just horrible.
Here, you get one
it's
more.
It's horrible. It's horrible. Thanks, everybody, for watching my disgraceful... But you hit it, though. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, I did hit it.
And I'm proud of you. I'm proud of all of you out there, too.
Now, moving on to the end side, where we talk about something outside the world of magic.
We're getting delirious now.
Josh, what happened to your basketball skills?
This is not basketball. This is more like baseball. I'm not a good baseball player.
Oh, okay. Those like, don't translate? Because you were saying basketball and golf translate, but...
Oh, you know my theory that good golfers are good shooters in basketball.
Shooters, okay, gotcha.
Because it's not repetitive motion.
Right. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Cool, that's just a theory.
Cool.
Good theory.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
And we will see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter @JFWong and @JoshLeeKwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
peace.
I thought you were saying pee for a while.
It doesn't work as good with peace.
Pee, 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 pee.
Don't worry, we're not getting delirious.
If you're still listening, good for you.
Also, you have way too much time on your hands. Go watch Stranger Things 2.
It's been out for like 3 weeks now,
Carlos. Go watch it again.
What if it's bad?
Oh, man, I hope it's good.
I hope it's good. You know what I know will be good?
We're still going.
Millie Bobby Brown will be good. Oh, guaranteed. Yeah. She's lights amazing. Out. Incredible. I cannot believe someone at that age has such depth of emotion. And it's incredibly cool to see someone like that, because so many times you see the sad tales of what happens to kids in Hollywood. Like the Drew Barrymores of the world that gets sucked
into. Well, I hope Millie Bobby Brown can avoid that.
I think she will. She seems like she has a good head on her shoulders. Her
she's still in the maelstrom now, so we won't know for about 10 years.
True, true. That's a good point. As long as her parents, you know, also have a level head on their shoulders, I think she's got a good shot.
I don't know. Can we end this now?
Yeah, we can end this now. All right. Bye, guys.
See ya. I mean, peace.
Peace.